Thought for today. Our attitude may be human, but it is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. Our attitude may be human, but it is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. Our attitude may be human, but it is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. It's very interesting how we are so concerned about being human when human is what we are. We are human in every way, shape, and form, in everything that we do, in every idea that goes in our head, in every desire we have for ourselves. It would be beautiful if we could be spiritual. It'd be beautiful if we could be divine. But we don't want to be spiritual, and we don't want to be divine. Because every time the possibility of being spiritual and being divine comes up, we fight it. Why do we fight it? We fight it primarily because it is so contrary to what our human body responds to. Our human body responds to the idea that we are physical. Our human body responds to the idea we are emotional. Our human body responds to the idea that we need to be touched, we need to be felt, we need to be known by other people. Our human body is all so human and all so wonderful. It is so marvelously created that it entices us at every turn. And this is very true. This is very true. I made several passes around the meditation centers this morning, and as I looked in upon the meditation center, I noticed that the human body was in control. The spiritual being was not present. It was present, but it was not in control. It was just taking a back seat and sort of laying back and doing nothing. Some of you were cuddled up so beautifully, you'd think that you were in your cozy bed. Others were so abandonedly throwing yourself out on the arms of Morpheus that if somebody had taken a wiener and stuck it in your mouth would have been wide open to receive it. And some of you were leaning against whatever you were leaning against and using it as a prop to hold you up. And some of you, on my second pass around, were jumping the gun and you were up before the time to get up was. But of course, if you were only sleeping, it didn't matter where you were, because your body was in charge. Your human body was in charge. And your human body will always be in charge. And I'm sure that's what you want to have. You want to have your human body in charge. Because every time I work with you to give you ideas on discipline, you fight the discipline. You forget. You forget one thing. When you go to school, and your teacher makes suggestions to you, and you don't follow them, you blame the teacher for your ignorance. You go home and say, "No, I didn't learn anything today. My teacher's a dum-dum." "Well, what did your teacher do?" "Well, my teacher said we should read this book and we should read that. And my teacher said to me, pay attention, you should be listening in class, you should be listening. Open your eyes." But I told her I didn't have to. And of course, that sort of recalcitrant attitude, that sort of attitude that you're not going to cooperate, merely means that you're not interested in an education. If you take violin lessons and you don't practice, why bother taking violin lessons? The few moments you're at the violin teacher and working on whatever you're working on is not going to suffice to move you into being a very competent violinist. It's not a matter that you don't know these things already. It's just a matter that your physical body is saying to you, no way are you going to do anything that is going to show off your magnificence. Your physical body would love to have you work out at the gym, or would it? Your physical body would love it if you'd stuff it with food, or would it? They say that the less you eat, the longer you live. Well, maybe the physical body is trying to kill you. Ever thought of that? When we give our power over to something other than our spiritual path, then our demise is sure to come. When we give power over to anything which does not lead us to our highest and our best, then we are certainly open for lots and lots of trouble. Because our highest and best doesn't even know what trouble is. Our highest and best doesn't even know what limitation is. Our highest and best doesn't know what illness or disease are. Our highest and best doesn't know what it means to say, I don't know. But you see, to be aware of our highest and best takes an attitude. And the attitude is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. And the attitude is human. This is what we have created ourselves as living with in this environment, in this dimension of life. We have created ourselves having our attitude, being the dominator, as one might say the denominator, for all that follows. And when our attitude is one of spiritual illumination, there is no limitation of any kind. We have a foundation that is so powerful and so strong that nothing can tear it away. But we don't get this foundation for nothing, because we came here to play a game. We came here to pretend we don't know who we are, that we want to remember who we are, sort of. We came here to play the game, to be ourselves and have fun. But what are we doing? We are playing the game of whatever anybody else wants us to be. What does society want you to be? I can tell you what society wants you to be. It wants you to be a follower. People who are leaders are rare. People who are leaders are not appreciated by society and all the things. Society does its utmost to destroy a leader, because they don't like leaders. They will look into their background, into their foreground, into their activities, and they will find every little thing that they can do to say they're bad. You can take Charles Dickens, one of the greatest novelists that has ever lived, one of the most lovely minds that you could ever imagine. And during his lifetime, they tried to tear him down. They tried to destroy him. They didn't pay him money so that he could continue his work. He lived in virtual poverty most of his life. The world didn't appreciate him. But he appreciated himself. He enjoyed himself. He didn't care. Certainly, if he had money, he would have enjoyed that, and he did from time to time. But he didn't care. People would copy his writings and not pay any royalty. So his work was being given away for free. But he had a good attitude. His attitude was, I'm filled with beautiful ideas, beautiful stories. Mine is to write. Like Mark Twain, his was to write. And he wrote all these stories, and he was just an ordinary man. He had no great wealth. In later years, he might have enjoyed some of the profits from his work, but basically all of his life, he was a newspaper man. You see, our human body wants to tear us away from our divine revelation. Now, we are very humorous. We are very full of laughter as we read what Mark Twain has to say about the Bible. And yet, as we read about it, and as we see the things that he has to say, he made Adam and Eve into a very contemporary man and woman, living in attitudes of his century. And they were charming. They're very charming. But we have so sanctified the Bible that no one is allowed to defame the Bible. No one is allowed to talk about the Bible in any way other than how it is written. How are we written? What sort of Bible are we writing in our heart? Are we writing a Bible with an attitude that says, I am great, I am wonderful, I am beautiful, I am good, I am the creator of my world, my world is great, my world is wonderful, my world is beautiful, I am the creator of my world is successful, my world is happy, my world is joyous, I am the creator of me, I am supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, I am myself, I like myself, I have fun being me. Do we say that? Oh, no. Oh, I got to have a time off. I got to go here and I got to do. It's not the matter you have to have time off. It's not the matter you have to. I choose to do this. You don't have to do this because if you don't do this, your life is going to be a shambles. You want to do this because you want to do it. I tell you 1,000,000,000 times, maybe 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 times, don't ever run from something, run to something. Don't say, I don't want to do this. I am sick of it, I'm going to go and do this. Just say, I'm going to do this. You know, so many people in their marriages, when they decide to quit, they say their spouse was terrible. They say their spouse was a louse. Their spouse cheated on them, man or woman. They say all these terrible things. And they virtually hate their spouse. And that's the only way that they could break that vow that they had made in their marriage. But actually, they're saying that they are stupid, that they used poor judgment in selecting a mate, that they used poor judgment all the years of their marriage, remaining with that person, they used poor judgment. You don't have to do that. When you're working for a company, and then you're offered a new job, or you want to go and pursue a new job, but working for that company keeps you too busy to do that. You go and pursue the new job. You don't say, the company I was working for is terrible, or was terrible, or the company I was working for didn't give me a chance to improve. You go and improve. And that's an attitude that is so important. With that attitude, we can achieve anything. We can accomplish anything. The attitude of believing in ourselves. Our attitude may be human because attitudes are human. That's what it's all about. But it is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. What is your attitude about yourself? Please always run to happiness. Run to joy. Run to that which thrills you. But don't belittle what you leave behind. I'm so busy, I just have been going on constantly, and I got to get away from this work, I got to get away from this work, I got to get away from this work, it's just driving me mad, I got to get away from it, I got to have a day off, I got to have an hour off, I got to go and do this. Each one of you have said that from time to time. Christina is doing that at the moment. Now what she decides to do, it's not a matter of coming back here, but what she decides to do is going to be the telling thing in the rest of her life. Coming back here is a beautiful thing because we are dedicated to walking our path, and I constantly remind you of it, and you hate me for it. But if you're going to walk your path alone, or somewhere else, which is fine, are you going to dedicate yourself to it any better than you did to this? Because if you dedicated yourself to what we are teaching here, and what we're teaching here is very wonderful. If you're dedicating yourself to what we're teaching here, you will have the most wonderful, fulfilled life in the universe. We don't own you here. You don't own us here. But you owe a responsibility to yourself to make sure that at all times your attitude is a blessing to you, that your attitude is uplifting, that your attitude is glorious. And to do that, you need to discipline yourself. You need to discipline your thinking. You have to listen. Some of you have taken on a habit of not listening the moment something confronts you that is not pleasant. Some of you have taken on the attitude of, oh, I was thinking of something else. Whenever your sharer, your teacher, whoever that may be, talks, whoever you've chosen for that purpose, listen. Listen. Don't judge. Listen. And if your sharer says that you're full of nothing, you're a dum-dum, you're stupid, listen. And if this is what you want to put in your consciousness, put it in your consciousness. If what you want to put in your consciousness is, I am whole and perfect, I am beautiful, I am wonderful, then put that in your consciousness. But remember, if your sharer is worth anything, if your teacher is of any value at all, they've been there, done that. They know what you're thinking. They know what's going on in your mind. And so your sharer, your teacher says to you, oh, that won't work, you're stupid, you're dumb, you have no ability to learn that, you're an idiot. That's what you're thinking. And your sharer reflects it back to you. And then you get angry at your sharer. You always want to kill the messenger. This is a universal thing. Pure psychology. Oh, true, I could spend my time looking only at my reflection in you and saying, you're fantastic, you're glorious, you're good. Oh, that would be good. I'd like you to do that. That would be wonderful, Herb. And I say, you're successful and you're fantastic. You're glorious. You are independently wealthy. You live in your eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. Everyone in the world loves you. You are such a glorious, wonderful person. You are so magnificent. You are so pure and you're so beautiful. You are so fantastic. Your glow shines from within you. Your diamond is polished so beautifully. Everyone looks at you and says, oh my, what a beautiful soul. Oh my, how glorious. Oh my, aren't they wonderful? And then you say, Herb, stop it! What do you mean? I'm merely speaking the truth about what I see in you, which is me. You're overkilling me. Don't do that, please. It makes me sick. Well, would you rather have me say what attitudes you're living by and the things that you currently are expressing? Or would you like to have me say whatever it is that I see in you, which is what you tell me you'd like to see in you? You see, overkilling can be in either direction. Overkilling can be in seeing my purity in you, or overkilling can be seeing who you think you are and how you're acting in you. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. What sort of things are you thinking in your heart? What attitude do you have about yourself? What is your everyday attitude about yourself? Now, when your attitude about yourself is what my attitude is about myself and what I see in you, then you will be very content here. But if your attitude about yourself is contrary to what I see in you, which is your purity and your perfection, you're not going to be happy here, because you're going to feel dirty. You're going to feel used. You're going to feel put upon. You're going to feel overkilled. Well, I'm willing to risk it, if you're willing to risk it. I'm willing to risk the idea that you really do want to walk your spiritual path. You really do want to learn discipline. When I say to you, I ask a question, and you go around the barn before you answer the question, this is not something new. I used to say that to Ilse quite regularly. Ilse, don't go around the barn, go directly in and tell me what your answer is. And everyone thought that was so charming and humorous. But be specific. You see, when you're specific, then you're not letting all of the miscellanea come in and bother you. What did the man have to say? Oh, he told me a story that was so wonderful. No, no, no. What did he have to say about the business? Oh, well, then, oh, I see, okay. You see, if I were more specific, I would have said the business, but I said, what did the man have to say? And the thing that sparkled you about what he had to say was his wonderful story, which we will hear at breakfast today. And it's a wonderful story. It's a great story. It's a spiritually illuminating story. But you see, our attitude may be human, but it's a foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. And it is up to us. It is up to us to begin to recognize that we must discipline ourselves. People came to Jesus and said, Jesus, heal me. He says, you look good to me. What's your problem? They said, well, I have a broken leg. Oh, great, you'd like another broken leg. Well, I think we can handle that. Oh, you've got leprosy. You've got, you can't see, or this and that. Hey, that's neat. Maybe we can add another dimension to your unhappiness. Jesus said to the people, I am the Christ. I can only see in you what I am. And I see you whole and perfect.
Well, Herb, masters don't go to Mount Shasta to get themselves back in order again. Not masters. Masters don't do that. Masters don't do that. Masters don't do that. Masters are beyond that. Masters don't have...
Oh, is that right? How interesting. And Jesus turned over the temple of the money changers, the table of the money changers in the temple. And Jesus said, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and give unto God what is God's. And Jesus said to the fig tree, you do not bear fruit while it is your season to bear it. Therefore you shall be barren. And the tree died. You see, what does the Christ see? Did Jesus have to go to the desert for 40 days and 40 nights and sort of get his act back in order again? Perhaps. Perhaps not. Do masters come to Mount Shasta and be by the great crystal and work with the balancers to get their life back in order? Perhaps. Perhaps not. All depends on where your thinking is. If your thinking is, a master shouldn't have to do that, well, I tell you that any master who lives in a human environment is subject to the human foibles and the human rules. If a master lives above that, then a master does not involve himself in the human world. He may be there, in it, but not of it, as Jesus told us too. Be in the world, but not of it. And the masters who are in the world and not of it we don't know them. We may see them passing like a ship in the night, untouched by the world about them, enjoying the theater and knowing it is only theater. It is not real. Knowing it is illusion after illusion after illusion. When we're in charge of our attitude, we're in charge of our human illusion. Because our attitude has nothing to do with our divinity and our spirituality. But our humanity limits us from living in our spirituality and our divinity. Because it wants to call us back to limitation. It wants to call us back to compassion and sympathy. It wants to call us back from being aware that we are divine to being aware that we are human. I ask each one of you who are proctors at the University of Healing to please read the lesson the student has read and then correct his essay and paper. You say, why must we do that? We've done that. We've been there. We've passed all those. Because you must put yourself in the illumined, educated, intellectual aspect that the student is in writing that lesson. And from that lesson, from that essay, he is drawing, rather in that essay, he's drawing out of the lesson what he learned in the lesson, hopefully. And if he's drawn out of the lesson what he learned in the lesson, and you are far advanced, you're off in the absolute concept, you're off in the I am God, God I am concept, you're off in a concept that is beyond what they have yet to attain, then you will mark them unkindly, not realizing that they have yet to take the step that you have already taken into the awareness of their divinity. And so I have you step back in time, as it were, in that level of consciousness where you were, where they are. And as each step goes on, they add new luster to their spiritual life. And you joy with them in the steps they make because you made those steps too. Our attitude may be human, but it's the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. And the dreams that we entertain are being aware of our spiritual self, being ourself and having fun. Shakespeare said, to be or not to be, that is the question. And you ask that question of yourself daily, whether to be or not to be is the question. Whether you will be your divine self and have fun, or whether you will be your human self and live in quasi-happiness, misery, whatever. Your choice. It's a decision that only you can make by taking charge of your attitude with discipline and learning that discipline so thoroughly that you're the master of yourself. Our foundation may be human, but it is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. Our foundation may be human, but it is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. Our foundation is so important. And our attitude, while it may be human, is the foundation for the fulfillment of any dream we may ever entertain. I love you.